wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
I really do love that intro.
We have a new jingle.
I we do.
Wow. It's new, right?
Last week was the first time it came in.
Oof.
Yeah.
Very good.
So do you want to take it away, Anika, with this first topic?
Yes. So we were looking at the existence of stars made out of antimatter.
Absolutely. And obviously we need to talk about antimatter before we talk about stars made of antimatter. So a bunch of workers in Toulouse in France have looked over the last 10 years of observations from a satellite up there called the Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope. And it analyzes things called gamma rays, which are very, very, very energetic particles, and are which are sometimes given out when antimatter collides with matter. Okay, and so this has got them interested because they think that they may have detected possible signs of stars made of the stuff called antimatter, which sounds like something out of Star Trek or something, but isn't. So we think of normal matter. We think of atoms and what atoms are made of. And atoms are made of three things. So
electrons, protons, and neutrons.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow, very good. Very
year
good.
Year 9 physics. Okay.
So absolutely. Electrons, protons, and neutrons. Now, if we're talking about antimatter, then we, instead of the electron, have this thing called the positron, which is an electron with a positive charge, which is weird.
Okay.
Or we have the antiproton, which is a proton with negative charge. Or we have the antineutron, et cetera, et cetera. We have all of these antiprotons that go, or antiparticles that go together with real matter particles. Okay? So when the Big Bang happened, which was 13 billion or so years ago, it was thought that there was an equal amount of matter and antimatter created in the Big Bang. Now, for some reason, all of the antimatter, or pretty much most of the antimatter, seems to have gone, and we're only left with matter. So somehow matter won the battle between matter and antimatter. Now, as I said, the weird thing about matter and antimatter is that when they come together, they annihilate each other. Okay, so if you've got solid matter and solid antimatter, you bring them together, all you get out is energy.
Okay.
And very, very high energy, energy in the form of gamma rays. Okay, if you've had a PET scan, no, okay, so that's a scan that you can get in hospital, a PET scan. It stands for positron emission tomography, and in fact that uses antimatter because there are some radioactive isotopes, like isotopes of such simple things as carbon and nitrogen, oxygen, that actually emit positrons, these antimatter particles, and when a positron meets an electron, so the antimatter meets the matter, they collide and they annihilate each other and they give off gamma rays. And these gamma rays can then be detected by special gamma ray cameras. So antimatter is not some sort of just academic construct. It's a real thing. So where is it all? If antimatter and matter were created in the same amounts at the Big Bang, what's happened to it? And that's a big question that nobody knows the answer to at the moment. Okay, one of the great questions in astrophysics, where's all the antimatter? So these folk in Toulouse have been poring over all of these data from the gamma ray camera, and they've found 14 examples of these gamma rays which could be of the correct energy to have come from a matter-antimatter annihilation, and which look to have come from particular points of light in the universe. And so they are positing that maybe these might be stars that are made out of antimatter. And that would then go some way to explaining the fact that we haven't got as much antimatter as we should have. But obviously they don't know yet. So this is all very, very preliminary work. But that's one way that it can be interpreted. So
can I ask what a star made of antimatter would look like?
Just the same, apparently, as a star made of matter. That's the problem that they have, is that all of the other aspects of it are just going to look exactly the same. So it's going to shine the same and do this, that, and everything else the same. It's just that when it comes into contact with matter, it's going it's just going to annihilate itself. So, pretty cool.
Interesting.
Pretty cool. Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. So for our next topic, we're talking about enzymes. So we're talking about enzymes that specifically are able to eat plastic. So how do they work, and how long till I can have some of them in my home so that I'm not producing any waste?
Indeed. So plastic is a bit of a bugger to get rid of, obviously. You know, we talk about recycling and stuff like that, which is fantastic. Sadly, most plastic doesn't seem to make it to recycling, and it ends up seemingly through mechanical action and stuff as these microplastic beads, which seem to be absolutely everywhere now, all over the planet, sadly. So what we desperately want is some way of decomposing plastic in such a manner that it doesn't actually lead to microplastics, because even decomposition of plastic, chemical decomposition, can still give you microplastics if you don't do it correctly. So workers at Berkeley, that famous university in the States, have just published a paper in Nature saying that they have managed to make this new plastic that, if you put it into a compost heap or you put it into water and you heat it moderately, I think they said was the quote, it would then decompose entirely. You wouldn't have any microplastics left or anything. And the way that they do that is to take what is a recyclable plastic at the moment, a thing called polylactide, which is made out of lactic acid. It's all natural. Okay. They make this polymer and then they incorporate these enzymes into the polymer as well. So this polylactide, it's used in sort of plastic bags and stuff like that. It's quite ubiquitous and stuff. However, if you put it in the wrong sort of landfill and stuff like that, it won't decompose as it's meant to, okay? It's got to be under the right conditions and everything. They incorporated this enzyme into this plastic, and what they managed to do is to get the enzymes to eat the strands of the plastic. Now, these are big, long, 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 long chains of atoms, and what you want these enzymes to do is to eat them from the ends, like, you know, spaghetti, like, you know, 1001 Dalmatians. No, not 1001 Dalmatians. Lady and the Tramp, you know the one. Yeah. So trying to get it to do it like that, rather than snipping it into bits, because you get microplastics when you do that. They have managed to be able to do that very, very efficiently. And as I say, they've managed to make this plastic that will just basically disappear in water after a few days, which bodes well, I think, for hopefully the future of the planet. They have patented this, they've started a company, etc., etc., so they're serious about it. The preliminary results look very, very promising, and hopefully this will sort of rid us of the problem of microplastics and decomposing plastics, etc.
That's insane. I really hope that we can sort of use this for all the other plastics that are floating around.
Yeah. Well, as I say, it is a start, you know, it's a proof of concept, I guess. So, you know, good luck to them.
Sweet. So that's all we've got for Dear Science this week. Unfortunately, because we've got Brooke Van Velden coming up very soon, we're doing a live interview with her. Thank you so much, Alan.
Always a pleasure.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.